This is Positive Parenting. Parenting expertise and advice from best-selling parenting author and national newspaper columnist, Mr. Dad, Armin Brott.
Hey there, I'm Armin Brott, and this is Positive Parenting. For Joanna Stein, who's a writer and comedian and a mom, parenting is kind of an extreme sport. Her stories from the trenches are not always going to be the most familiar things to everybody, but they will make you laugh. She's a mother who isn't afraid to tell things exactly as she sees them, but who, at the root of it all, loves her life as a parent. Her message is pretty simple. Even if you're toting around Murphy's Law in your baby stroller, and Murphy's Law, of course, being if something can go wrong, it will go wrong. And even when it hits you that no parenting book can really tell you how your life is going to change after you have a baby, the bottom line is you can get through it. Joanna's going to tell us some great stories of how she navigated a war on the color pink on behalf of her baby girl, or how she calmed her child with a barf bag puppet on an airplane that was still holding the remains of a previous passenger's air sickness. Bad hair days, disastrous playdates in the park, lies she's told her daughter, pacifier wars, the many ways her preschooler has insulted her over the years, and even her first visit to an emergency room. So, even though Mother's Day was a week or so ago, I want to invite you to celebrate the honest and hilarious, well, sometimes hilarious, everyday side of motherhood with comedian Joanna Stein. You'll get that and a lot more in today's Positive Parenting Show, which will continue right after this.
More with Mr. Dad, Armin Brott, after this, from the MrDad.com radio network.
Ever notice when you have a baby, everyone seems to give you advice? From your mother-in-law,
don't you know you can't take that baby out in the rain today? And where is her hat?
To your own parents.
You should take the baby outside every day, even in the rain.
To your friends.
You have got to get this diaper cream. It is so much better than the one you've been using.
When it comes to the important stuff, like immunizations and protecting my baby's health, I trust my baby's doctor. She really listens to my questions about shots, she gives me great information, and she works with me to make sure my baby gets protected. And that's something even my mother-in-law can agree with.
Honey, I totally support you getting the baby vaccinated, but really, shouldn't you put the baby's hat back on?
A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
Welcome back to Positive Parenting. I'm Armin Brott, and my guest for this part of today's show is Joanna Stein, who's the author of How Not to Calm a Child on a Plane and Other Lessons in Parenting from a Highly Questionable Source. Joanna, hey, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
You'd have no reason to know this, but I teach classes at one of the big hospitals in San Francisco for expectant fathers. It's a one-shot class. It happens. We do it every month. And in the beginning of the class, I'm talking to the guys about how their life is going to change and how having a kid is going to be all-consuming. And I mention a wonderful quote that I wish I would have come up with. It was a woman who was asked to talk about the difference between the way that everybody told her parenthood was going to be and the way that it actually turned out to be. And she said this. She said, "It's just like the difference between watching a tornado on TV and having one tear the roof off your house." As I was just thinking that, as I'm reading through your book and you talk about so openly about the things that went right, the things that went wrong, and how you changed things, talk a little bit about how everybody told you parenthood was going to be and then how it actually turned out.
That's a great question. And I have to preface this, by the way, by saying that your book is actually the first book, or one of your books, The New Father, is one of the first books that I bought in a panic when I realized that we were, you know, going to have a baby. So a lot of you actually put to rest a lot of my initial fears. So thank you.
Well, glad to help.
Really, I really loved your book. So just a little bit of some fan points for you. I guess as far as what I was expecting, I really had this sense that, like, I thought everything was going to smell like patchouli, and I just, everything was so gauzy in my fantasy version of being a mom, and I couldn't get the image of breastfeeding my sweet little silent child, and just how just how perfect it was going to be. And I don't know specifically where I got that, but I really was filled with this image that, you know, I don't know, it's going to be some barefoot hippie with my baby strapped to my back 24 hours and getting enough sleep all the time. For some reason, I didn't really factor in the whole sleeplessness thing.
But, yeah, it's such a weird thing. You think with all of the billions of babies who've been born, that this idea that parenthood, especially in the beginning, is going to be some sort of a walk through the park, it's strange that that continues to be out there.
Yeah, maybe it's mankind's way of keeping the species going. I don't know. We're all part of this plot to keep expectant parents in the dark. It's working. People are still having babies.
It's kind of like childbirth. The only reason that anybody in their right mind would have a second child,
yeah,
is if you forgot what happened during the first one.
Well, and I feel that way really about the first. I used to say the first 3 months, but I feel that way about the first year, maybe 2 years. Like when I hold a baby now, I'm filled with terror. It's like I've never done it before. I'm positive I'm going to drop it. I know I was there. There are photos to prove it. I know I did it. I kept her alive. But I have no physical recollection of it. I know I hear some people saying, oh, I picked up a baby. It was just like, you know, it was just like 20 years ago. And I have absolutely no sense memory of it. And I don't know if that was just the fog of panic that I was in much of the time. Or I don't know. Or just my brain is now filled with so many experiences, it's just shoved those ones out.
But you still have only the one daughter, right?
Yes. So, as far as I know, yes.
Well, because you never know who the mother is with these things, I guess.
Absolutely, yeah. You blink once. And
But, I mean, has this amnesia of yours led you to want to have another one just to kind of try again to see if you can get that into your head?
Just for that reason. Just to test my memory. No, I really do. My pendulum swings wildly on the second kid issue. It's kind of the... I really do think about it. I wrote about it. I wrote a chapter about it. Because we're very happy. We're a really tidy little threesome. And now that she's, you know, can walk and talk and make lunch for herself on occasion, it's a lot easier. A lot of parts of it are a lot easier, but you know, I grew up with brothers, and I do. When I was much younger, I had a fantasy of having a huge family. So I do think about, you know, how fun it is to have siblings, and again, the fantasy of the two sisters who love each other and cherish each other. But you know, then there's the flip side where I know sisters who want to kill each other on a daily basis, and so I know that there's no guarantee. I guess my bottom line is that we're perfectly fine as a threesome. If another came along, I'm sure I'd panic about it at great length, and then I'd accept it and, you know, move on to having that holy cow, I'm holding a newborn baby, I hope I don't drop it experience.
So the book is very funny, and
oh, thank you.
Your work in television and stuff that probably a lot of people have seen on Comedy Central. You spend a lot of time talking about your family, your husband, your parents, and I'm always curious about these things that some of it seems, I don't want to say uncomfortable, but let's just say uncomfortable, to read. Because
sure.
Say, oh gosh, I don't know that I would have ever had the guts to say something like that about somebody I've been involved with, or I do it about my kids sometimes, but, you know, how does that go? Are you worried about these things?
Well, I do. Are you talking about the fact that I discussed my parents having sex?
Not specifically.
That
I was talking.
Well, that's the one that filled me. With a little bit of dread. But I did give the entire thing to my parents and said, "Here you go. You have veto power. If there's anything in here that you don't even have to explain why it bothers you, you know, there's no question. I will take it out." And same with my husband. But, you know, you've read the book, so you know that my parents are...
Yeah, they were okay with it.
Who right. actually who met in Berkeley, not far from you, I think.
No.
Which makes sense that they that's where they came from. So their response, other than giving me a ton of punch-up ideas for some of the jokes, both of them said, no, this is your experience. Whatever you want to write, it's cool. It's great. So they were not offended by anything. And same with my husband. He got the whole manuscript. There was one story that he was a little uncomfortable with, and I said, okay, fine, I'm not left, it's out. But I kept coming back to it, and it was a story about him mistaking a piece of dental floss in the toilet for an intestinal worm. and I understood. I mean, it's not an important story by any stretch, but it was so funny to me. Not his mistaking it. What was funny to me was my response to it, and I think and it did end up in the book ultimately because we had a long conversation about it, and I said, look, it's not me making fun of you. It's to me, if that had happened to me, if I had made that mistake, I would tell that story daily because I think it's such a very funny, very relatable human moment where, you know, it's like when you eat meats for dinner and you forget the next morning, you know, you go to the bathroom and you think you're
dying,
you know,
yeah,
from the inside. It's one of those moments that everybody can relate to. So in the end, he said, sure, it's fine. But I will say this, that whenever I write about anyone, particularly my husband and my daughter, I'm very, I have a very strong, a litmus test, I guess. I'm very careful to make sure that I am the idiot, if I may say, in a story.
Yeah,
the person who comes off worst of all is always me, because I don't, you know, first of all, they're my family, and I would never do anything that I thought would harm them in any way. But also, just as a reader and an audience member, that's the kind of stuff that I appreciate. I don't like comedy that refers to other people as, you know, that's judgmental, or that's sort of, you know, laughing at somebody as opposed to laughing with them or inviting someone to laugh, you know, at me. That's kind of my favorite humor, so.
Well, that's a good kind of humor. I mean, it's probably less likely to offend people if you're making fun of yourself, and it's harder for somebody to want to take it out of there.
Yeah. I mean, I hope no one is offended. I guess I'll find out. People are, I've heard from quite a few people who recognize themselves in the book, and, you know, so far no one has slapped me with a lawsuit. So I guess we're fine. Happy.
All right. Joanna Stein is the author of How Not to Calm a Child on a Plane and Other Lessons in Parenting from a Highly Questionable Source. We're going to take a quick break, and as soon as we get back, we're going to keep talking to Joanna about planes and trains and questionable things. I'm Armin Brott, and you're listening to Positive Parenting.
McGruff the Crime Dog here. Let's hear from an identity thief.
Identities are easy to catch online. I send people an official-looking email pretending to be their bank or credit card company and ask them to confirm their personal information. Books them every time.
Safeguard your personal information on the phone, online, and especially at home, because half of identity theft occurs by someone you think you know. Keep your identity to yourself and take a bite out of crime. Learn more from the National Crime Prevention Council at ncpc.org.
A message from this station, the U.S. Department of Justice, Crime Prevention Coalition of America, and the National Crime Prevention Council.
Salagadoola, Metchagaboola, bibbidi-bobbidi-boo.
You must be your fairy godmother. Yes.
It doesn't take a fairy godmother to tell you that the right fit means everything.
Good heavens, child. You can't go in that.
Children under 4'9" need to be in a booster seat because they aren't ready for adult safety belts alone. Many parents miss the important step of booster seats.
Maybe you better explain things to him.
Booster seats raise your child up so that a safety belt designed for adults will fit and protect them properly.
Oh, that does make a difference.
Remember that 4'9" is the magic number, and get your little pumpkin there safely in a booster seat.
Hop in, my dear. Oh, thank you.
And like Cinderella, you can live happily ever after.
It's like a dream, a wonderful dream come true.
For more information, visit boosterseat.gov. This has been a message from the U.S. Department of Transportation and the Ad Council.
Check it out, it's the Terminator. Hey, when'd you get back, huh?
Did you have to shoot anyone?
Why are you so distant? Are you not happy to see me?
So what's the deal? You gonna get a job now or what?
Why are you being so jumpy? Put all that stuff behind you, okay?
No one knows what it's like to come back from Iraq or Afghanistan unless they were there. Join other veterans at communityofveterans.org because we know where you're coming from. Brought to you by Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America and the Ad Council.
Get ready for more positive parenting with Armin Brott from the MrDad.com radio network.
Welcome back to Positive Parenting. If you're just joining us, we're talking with Joanna Stein, who's the author of How Not to Calm a Child on a Plane and Other Lessons in Parenting from a Highly Questionable Source. Diana, thanks for sticking with us. So I was just thinking as you were talking about writing things and kind of making fun of yourself, there was a story, since you happen to mention the book, The New Father, which talks about the first year, there was a story that I had in there in one of the early editions, and my editors made me take it out. And this is before I had sold a bunch of books and probably had the weight to say, nope, that goes in. It had to do with my oldest daughter, and this is probably, she was born in April, and this is a Thanksgiving thing. So she's about 7 months old, I guess. And she loved to eat pumpkin. We were making these pumpkin pies, and she just loved to have this pumpkin right out of the can, of course, because we're not that big on cooking anyway. And as you know, what happens, what goes in babies tends to kind of come out looking pretty much the same. And as she was going through all this pumpkin stuff, she'd be spilling it. And you know how, well, I don't know if you do this, but I certainly did. Their kid is chewing something and it slips out of the mouth or they spit it out. Well, just wipe it up with my finger and put it in my own mouth and eat it. And I'm feeding her and I see that there's a big glob of stuff that looked like pumpkin to me on her leg that she had, I thought, just dropped. And it was because it looked like pumpkin out of the can.
Oh, no.
Yeah, it was.
That is a rude awakening.
It was. Oh, God, how awful.
But how much Listerine did you go through after that?
Oh, I was rinsing my mouth out with boiling water. It was terrible.
Oh, I'm so sorry. So you were asked to take that story out. Did it end up? I don't remember reading that in my edition.
No, it's not. And I'm thinking now because I'm doing a big rewrite of the book right now for the 10th anniversary or something, and so I'm thinking of putting it back in.
To have it in there. Also, you live to tell the tale. So,
yeah.
So you know, in a way, it's comforting to hear that someone made a mistake like that and it didn't kill you.
All right.
My gosh, that's terrifying.
All right, so tell us the story about calming a child on a plane. That is so funny.
Oh, God. The short version, of course, is that we were getting on a plane to go to Florida to see my mother-in-law. And as we were boarding the plane, my daughter, who was a few months old at the time, started freaking out. No, not a few months. She was over a year. Freaking out, screaming at the top of her lungs. She didn't want to get on the plane. We were sitting at the very front at the bulkhead. I panicked. I was doing everything I could to calm her down because I've been that person. You know, it wasn't much earlier that I had no kid, and I was that person who, you know, the first sound of a crying child on a plane, I wanted to, you know, jump out the window. So I did everything I could to get her to stop. Nothing worked. So it sort of my last resort was to pull out a barf bag from the seat in front of me, and I took one of my crayons and I scrawled a little puppet on it, and I said, "Ooga booga," with the puppet, and it worked. She stopped crying and she started giggling. And in my infinite wisdom, I thought, well, one puppet's great, but two puppets—that's a show. So I reached into my husband's, his wall pocket, and I grabbed the bag out of his, and I put a little face on that one, and I stuck my hand inside, and that was when I realized that someone had used the bag prior to that moment.
Oh, God.
But had used it for, you know, the purpose that it was intended. So there was barf in there, and it was on my hand, and we were about to take off, and so I had to sprint from the front of the plane to the back. You know, people were still putting their luggage, you know, in the overhead bins. And it was the longest 30 seconds of my life getting to the bathroom. And as I was washing the, you know, stuff, honey roasted peanuts that had been digested by that point, off of my hand, I just could not get over the confluence of events that had, you know, A, who makes a puppet out of a barf bag? B, what are the odds? You know, whoever uses one, I never see people barf into barf bags. who would shove one back in a seat pocket? How?
Yeah,
how
that's
did it
the one.
That was the one that I chose to stick my. Anyway, yeah. So that was sort of the first story that I sort of you know, once I got over my horror. I'm sure, it took a good 48 hours. I wrote it down because I just. Get over.
Well, you have to, yeah.
That's
that one, great story.
That one goes down in history as one of the most disgusting things. If I had taken a taste of pumpkin baby poop, that might have been my first thing.
Right. That could displace barf on your hand, I think. But yeah,
they're maybe neck and neck, those two stories. Yeah. So that was the first story that I wrote, and I wrote it, and I was reading Motherlode, which is a
the New York Times column.
Yes, which I love, and at the time Lisa Belkin, it was her column, and I was such a fan, and I read her voraciously, and I read one story about it was a series story about a woman who had been kicked off a plane because her baby wouldn't stop crying, so I just wrote her this kind of tentative fan letter and said I have a kind of a similar experience to tell you about, and she wrote me back almost immediately and said, "This is great. Can I post this?" And I said, "Yeah, sure." So she did, and the comment—I mean, I was so blown away by the relatability of it. You know, I thought this was such a singular experience, and yet it's people related to it. Obviously, not the specificity of it, but they really related to you know, just to all of the feelings that I'd had. Going through it.
You know, you're somebody, Joanna, who does a lot of performing in public, so you're used to being humiliated, I suppose, or in front of large groups of people, which is probably a character building kind of a thing that everybody
should
do.
Yeah, I'm still working on that character, apparently, yeah.
Yeah. So what has been a moment in your parenting career where you wish you could have just disappeared? Or everybody else would have disappeared?
Oh, gosh. There have been a lot. It usually comes down to moments that my daughter, she's very, very social and very talkative. And she says things, you know, in public. We were at a dinner once, and she had just learned numbers, and she was just learning how to count, and she would not stop saying, "Guess how old my mommy is?" My mom, guess how old, because it was a, and I'm not actually very sensitive about my age, but for some reason she would not stop saying it to people, and I would say, I'm 43, it's fine, I'm 43, my mommy's 43, I bet she's older than you, I bet she's, and every, you know, and we were seated at a table of people of all ages from, you know, 20 to 70, and according to my daughter, I was the oldest person at the table. So that was just one I found kind of funny. She has, I think she called somebody, she called a man with a rather rotund tummy pregnant. That was an exciting one. She said a lot of things to me in private that haven't quite hurt my feelings, but I had to write down. Like she once told me that my breath smelled like a fart.
Lovely.
I had to write down as soon as I got over the sting. I had to write that one down. She said, "Oh, mommy, when you die, can I have your iPhone?" That was a good one. She asked me the same about my wedding ring. So she's looking forward to a lot of things apparently after my demise. I'm kind of endlessly fascinated by the things she says. And that she has no self-consciousness about it.
Yeah.
You know, I think it's just kind of an admirable human trait, to be honest.
I remember my daughter, when she was probably about the same age as your daughter, saying, when we were walking down the street in Berkeley, actually, she said, "Oh, look at the chocolate man," about an African-American guy. And I thought that, you know, not in Berkeley, but not anywhere should you be. It's like, you know, we haven't had a conversation about diversity enough in my family or something.
Right. Yeah, you just want to stop the gentleman and go, "Listen, can I please just, maybe we have a conversation so you can know how I feel. Don't let me be judged by this 4-year-old.
Joanna Stein, the author of How Not to Calm a Child on a Plane and Other Lessons in Parenting from a Highly Questionable Source. Not really so questionable, but great book. Very, very funny. Joanna, thanks for joining us.
This heavyweight bout is about to begin. The challenger wears white trunks with a blue stripe, and the champ is wearing, looks like an examination gown from the doctor's office. And from the back, we can... Ooh, that's not pretty. Champ, what's with the crazy getup?
I've got to take care of my family.
Yeah, so?
Well, when you love your family, you got to go in and get those important medical screenings. A lot of potentially deadly diseases can be treated if you catch them in time.
So you wear the examination gown because...
Because I'm a real man. Real men take care of their families and get those tests. Real men wear gowns.
Okay, champ, good luck. Here we go. The champ's not wasting any time. It's over. This fight is over. Champ, you barely broke a sweat. Any words for your fans out there?
Remember, go to ahrq.gov for a list of the tests they need to get and when to get them.
What was that web address again?
ahrq.gov. And remember, real men wear gowns.
Go to ahrq.gov. This message brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, AHRQ, and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to Positive Parenting. I'm Armin Brott, joined by Sam Fuse, who is my writing partner on Parents at Play. Let's talk superheroes. In the past week, I've taken my daughter to see Captain America and Spider-Man, and we're kind of gearing up for the new X-Men movie. And, you know, I remember as a kid running around pretending to be all different kinds of superheroes, and I would sometimes say, you know, I've got Thor's hammer, and I can fly like Superman, and I can do other things like Green Lantern. And one of the popular new toy trends, or superhero toy trends anyway, is mashers, where you can actually take different pieces of different superheroes and put them together and make your own.
My son loves these things. I haven't seen him be so infatuated with a toy and a really, you can, you know, pull apart different heads, arms, legs, bodies. There's the good guys and the bad guys and the in-between guys. And, you know, you can mix and mash them and make whoever you want. And, the prices are pretty decent. You can get them for between $10 and $20, and they're available pretty much everywhere, which makes it even easier.
For $10 or $20, what do you get?
Well, you get the figure. The figures are different. You can get Spider-Man, Captain America. There's two different versions of Captain America. There are several different versions of Iron Man, Doctor Doom. They all fit, no matter, like, Hulk is ridiculously larger than all the other ones, but he still fits into all the other joints. So each character fits into all the other characters.
Mm-hmm.
And
perfect.
So do their accessories. Some of them come with accessories, which is why some of them are a little more expensive. And everything fits everybody else.
Another thing I remember from being a kid, the Power Rangers running around all over the place. And there's just, they were everywhere. And I kept thinking as I was growing up, oh, these people get tired of that. And they don't. They just keep coming back.
I remember my little brother being just infatuated with those things. And I was like, oh, these are the stupidest toys ever, because I was a tween, so I was way cool. When the very first toys came out of the Power Rangers, I remember standing in a line. My very first Black Friday Toys R Us experience was for Power Rangers for my little brother. And my son has now, again, completely infatuated all over again. And they have so many cool toys, and there's
the new one, the Zords.
Legacy Megazord,
yeah,
which is like a throwback to the original one, and it does look very much like the one my little brother had.
Except you said that it's made out of metal instead of plastic, so it's...
Pieces of it. Some of it's still plastic. Some pieces are also die-cast metal, so it'll hold up better.
So, speaking of toys and TV shows, for that matter, that have been around forever, Pokemon, still around. Unbelievable. What's the deal with all the Pokemon coming back?
The newest ones are from the Pokemon X and Y video game that came out. We did a review of that.
Yes, we did.
But they're inspired by the Nintendo video games. The newest ones, Pokemon X and Pokemon Y, they're two different games. And it lets you catch the new Pokemon, like Chespin and Fennekin, which I'm sorry if I'm saying this wrong, Pokemon fans. I'm doing my best. But it's great for all sorts of people. Like, if you're a collector who's been into the game since you were a kid yourself and now you're an adult, or as a new gamer and collector, like, you know, my six-year-old, it works for everybody. These things are really durable. They're inexpensive, $8 for a two-pack, for example, but they're not going anywhere.
Well, people can get that review of the Pokemon X and Y by doing a search on parentsatplay.com, and you can also check out all the other reviews we've done of all sorts of other toys and games. We'll catch you right back here next week. Until then, I'm Armin Brott.
Thanks for listening to Positive Parenting. You can get more information on today's show and what we're working on in the weeks ahead at MrDad.com. While you're there, visit the MrDad.com gift shop with everything you need to help you become the dad or mom you want to be. Positive Parenting is a production of the MrDad.com radio network. Now, go be a great parent.